Speaking of receivers, though, let's get to McLaurin. He showed up yesterday. I think the way this got reported on initially was flawed, and the way this has been talked about largely has been off. So the idea that the holdout is over is true and accurate in that a hold-in has begun. But the way it is being reported, the way I see it written about by some people is essentially Terry McLaurin's not holding out anymore. He's at the facility rehabbing, and he's got this foot and ankle problem. Okay, I guess, if you really just want to take everyone at their word. Here is what is happening. Terry McLaurin got tired of being fined $50,000 a day.
Mm-hmm.
He is not going to keep getting fined $50,000 a day. We talked about this last week, and as I said, he's not going to get fined $811,000 when he misses preseason games. That is not a smart business decision. So he decided to do what I thought he was going to do to begin with, which made a lot more sense to me anyway and to a lot of people, and to just do the more traditional, in this CBA era, hold in. And so that is exactly what he's doing. So he has not come out as a distraction during practice, which I give him credit for. I'm assuming that's part of the deal that was struck. Everybody kind of trying to work together a little bit on this thing to say, hey, let's have some goodwill. My guess is they don't want him down on the sideline watching practice because fans are going to be yelling. And maybe if it's not an open day, both of the days he's been there, there have been fans. Maybe tomorrow when it's just the media, or in a couple days when it's just the media, maybe he's allowed to come out. But He has come out and talked to his agent. They've walked side by side in front of all the cameras. They have signed a bunch of autographs after practice. And they chant his name. And he has signed for a total of an hour over the last 2 days for every kid in a certain section of training camp. So he's reported, and he is there. He's a bigger distraction now to the team, for sure, than he was before he came back. So we could have the conversation is, you know, what's better for the club? Probably him holding out. What's better for McLaurin, just because it's $50,000 a day? Probably him holding in. But this does not mean progress is being made on the contract. In fact, I've heard otherwise. It's very much a stalemate still. This is extremely simple to me, Danny. This was just the move for him to stop getting fined.
Yeah.
And so he's there now. He's boys with the team. You know, he's buddies with all the players. He enjoys the fans. So he's doing everything other than practicing. And he's still at odds with the front office over the contract. Nothing's changed other than him showing up. And so they can't keep taking money out of his checking account.
Yeah, the thing I've talked about all throughout this process is from the team's perspective, the way the CBA is written, the way the agreement is, they've got a lot of leverage here. They are sort of exercising those rights. Right, they are playing hardball because they can, and there's only so many recourses a player has. Well, this is McLaurin's version of that. This is his recourse, right? Where you can hold out and get fined a bunch, or you can still kind of make your point while being there. And it's, you know, the longer this goes, the more distracting or destructive or detrimental it is for everybody involved. But this is him playing the same game that the team is playing. So again, no faulting anybody just yet, but I think you've said it very well. It's as much a PR move as anything. Like, you can't tell me it's not purposeful, rather, is the word I'm looking for, that he and his agent are having these heart-to-hearts on the field. Can everyone see everyone's face? Can we get everybody's camera to clack away to let everyone know when it's time for me and my agent to talk? It's all very purposeful, and it's a continuation of that PR strategy of public pressure, getting everybody yelling Terry, going to Eastern Motors where your job is your credit to give a press conference where you're cutting promos for 45 minutes about how great you are. It's kind of an extension of that. There's only so many levers they can pull, and this is one.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a media circus and a dog and pony show, and that's good for business for him.
Yeah.
You know, that's what the team is trying to avoid, essentially. And by the way, for the couple of days when he was actually holding out and he was not at the team facility, the story was going away. Not to say that it would stay away, because every few days you're still going to ask about it.
Mm-hmm.
But they were much better able to control it because it's only Dan Quinn speaking. And Dan Quinn has this way where when he's asked about it, he says, yeah, I'll tell you when I have an update. There's no update. What else are you going to do? Just hold him over the coals?
Mm-hmm.
So by Terry McLaurin being there, now he goes down to sign autographs. He comes back up. There is the ability to kind of walk alongside him and ask him some questions. And each of the last couple of days, we have done that. I had to work on my back pedal today. The quads were barking a little bit, coming uphill, backwards, trying to keep up with Terry McLaurin.
We don't need to talk.
Just taking it day by day.
Being here in the building, though, how does that improve the dialogue?
Just taking it day by day. Are you going to be able to practice at some point, or how far away from being healthy are you? Just taking it day by day.
Thanks.
It sounds to me like he might be taking it day by day.
Is it a day by day situation?
But this is where we are. It's Brian Fontana Panda Watch. I will acknowledge that right now, he and his agent are winning in the court of public opinion. And I think they're whooping butt. The player's generally going to. So they started with a 25-point lead probably. But by him showing up, by him signing autographs, I'm standing next to him the last couple days as kids are all saying, they need to pay you. Have they paid you yet? And he's like, not yet. And everyone's telling him he's the man and how great he is. In the court of public opinion, he is absolutely winning. Now, the Commanders don't care a ton about that. And when you go toe-to-toe with the choice they've made here, when you decide to make a bet that is getting into a very public dispute over a few million dollars with the face of your franchise and the most popular player on the team, this is what you invite, and you've got to deal with it.
Yeah, there's inevitability to that part of it. You're right, in the sense that where if you're going to play hardball, which is well within your rights to do, and I'd frankly rather you do that than just overpay everybody. I know the disagreement here that anybody could have is, well, this isn't just anybody. This is this guy. Please treat him special.
This is the guy. Yeah,
yeah. But if you're going to do that, then you understand that that doesn't just happen quietly. That's not happening in a vacuum. Like their teams are going through this. There are guys, I'm trying to remember the player for Detroit, the linebacker, who's asking for a new contract, is practicing, but it's a circus around there, and it's going on, knowing that if you're going to play hardball and it lingers, everyone's getting asked about it every day. Public pressure is going to be there every day. You eyes wide open on that. You're not a babe in the woods. If you're Adam Peters or Brandon Sosna or Newmark and company, you knew this kind of going in. It's almost, you know, from their perspective, talking about McLaurin and his agent, how much of this can you take? How bothered are you going to get before anything changes on your end?
Well, he's got two levers to pull, basically. One is the holdout. The other is demand a trade. And they have had no interest yet in demanding a trade, which I've been talking about is surprising to me. Everybody takes great offense to that. They get in their fan feathers or whatever, and they get really annoyed and get angry at me. I'm not suggesting that Washington should trade him or that Terry should want to be traded. My point is, as a player, you don't really have any leverage, and one of the things you can do is ask for a trade. It doesn't mean, by the way, that you're going to be traded. It just can help facilitate things and expedite things and show how angry you really are and how serious you are about getting a new contract. Oftentimes, I would be willing to bet almost every time that anybody has ever gone this far, which is to continue to hold out without practicing a week into training camp, they also demand a trade. To me, it would probably be not very common to do all of this and to never demand a trade. Like if you're unhappy enough to not show up in an era where it costs you huge money or to not practice in an era where most of the time guys just practice, you're willing to do that. You're also willing to demand a trade. It's like driving to the beach but not taking out your folding chair and sitting there and watching the waves for a little while. But, you know, everyone says, oh, the holdout is over. Well, as a technicality, sure, because he's holding in. What is a holdout? A holdout means he's unwilling to play. He is unwilling to practice. He is still doing that. And we all have to play this game as if he's injured. You know, and I've, number one priority of my entire career is like never question toughness. Never say that a guy that's hurt isn't really hurt. But like we all really know.
Yeah, his ankle's fine is what I'll say that.
He's not hurt. I mean, this is not an injury. But it's this. It is infuriating to hear Dan Quinn sit there and act like he's Sam Cosmi. I mean, at his press conference the last few days, he's like, we're getting Terry treatment. He's coming along well.
It's a process. It's day to day and every day.
He's in the training room. We're working with him. And it's like, oh, my God, don't lie to my face, bro. Like, just smirk. Say, yeah, he'll be in the training room. And we're not stupid. Don't act like we're stupid. Terry isn't even gone. It's not like he's walking out there with a fake limp or whenever the ankles come up in a couple of these little walk and talks, he's completely hasn't answered it or suggested he's actually hurt. But this is his leverage. And what's scary, I think, if you're a fan is, before he showed up, my point was $50,000 a day is eventually going to mean something. $811,000 to miss a preseason game. He's got to show up. Mm-hmm. Well, now he has shown up and you're doing this I'm injured thing. Well, if you're injured until you get paid, why ever stop being injured? He's there. He can't be fined. He's going to accrue a season. Like, there is no drawback, if he's serious about it, that would say eventually he's got to play, other than pride or his teammates kind of coming up to him and being like,
come on,
bro, you're killing us. But this, to me, him being there, doing the I'm hurt thing, like, if he was there and there was no ankle, there was no injury, I would say, okay, well, there's only a matter of time before you got to practice because you could still be fined or whatever. That's how you get out of the money. So why couldn't he do this in 2 weeks? Why couldn't he do this in a month?
Yeah, if we're still playing pretend in a few weeks and he's skipping preseason games because of it, my hand's going up here. That tide turns. Now we're pretending. You're under contract.
By the way,
let's go.
That's not like a month away. They play a preseason game in a week and a half.
Yeah.
Like, so, I think it's like 9 or 10 days.
And I don't remember a case where this has happened, what you're talking about, but it is. It's a legal recourse given the CBA. Like, it's one of these loopholes. They didn't think of this permutation. Maybe the next one they will, where someone could just pretend to be hurt for the extent of their contract and then, you know, call everyone's bluff, right? I guess to me, my opinion will lower significantly if that's something that he does. I'm not accusing him of doing it before he does it. So that's the end of that. But again, I think fan tide would turn at some point if we're still pretending to be hurt at, you know, a month from now or missing the regular season or as it might go. But I wonder what the team's recourse would be eventually. Like, let's say he's still out with an ankle into September and in game one of the regular season, game two of the regular season. Are we now calling in like independent arbiter third-party physicians to be like, yep, clean bill of health on the ankle. It's totally fine. You could absolutely be playing football. And then we go to court on something. I mean, like, what sort of, where would that end?
So,
this game of pretend.
We don't need to talk.
Just taking it day by day.
Being here in the building, though, how does that improve the dialogue?
Just taking it day by day. Are you going to be able to practice at some point, or how far away from being healthy are you? Just taking it day by day.
That is Terry McLaurin, who is taking it day by day.
Like, if you were to summarize with one phrase as to what he's doing and his plan, it would be?
I think he's taking it day by day.
Day by day.
There's a winning off the field ability there where you could just ask someone any question, yep, and you could just do a segment, and they're taking it day by day.
Other people taking multiple days at a time, not Terry.
He's Danny, I'm Grant. This is The Fan. So the question we've got for you guys is the hold-in better than the hold-out? I'm not so sure about that. It's certainly better than Terry McLaurin, because by showing up, he doesn't lose any more money, and that is why he showed up. It's not because they got closer to a contract, I don't think. It's not because he had to be there so that he could sign autographs and hang out with his buddies, although those are nice things too. $50,000 a day adds up very fast, and it's $811,000 as of next week when those preseason games start. So that's why he's there. He's got this mystery phantom injury thing now that is the ultimate out of anything he doesn't want to do. And in this case, that's practice or basically, yeah, just continue to tell the team, let me know when I'm getting paid, and that's when I'll start working. But I don't think this is better. It's certainly not better for the team. And I don't think it's better for the overall negotiation necessarily, because there could be some animus. Do you think Adam Peters and the people in the front office and the people over in Ashburn are excited that he and his agent are standing in the end zone every single day after practice, or that he's out there kind of working the charm with the people after every single practice? I don't think they like that very much. I think they would much rather it be that he's not there. Now, again, they've made their bed. They've got to sleep in it.
Sure.
They chose to be here. They could have paid him. They didn't. When you don't offer him market value, when you haven't paid him what the market dictates he's worth, this is what you got to deal with. But I think there's this assessment or this assumption, Danny, that if they're just closer together in proximity geographically, if they're in the same building, eventually they'll figure this out because he's going to have fun with his teammates and just want to be one of the guys. It could also work the other way, where they start to get more and more annoyed by how he's conducting himself or operating, whereas if he wasn't at the facility at all, it's like out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah, neither are good. So we'll start there. Like, not this is not like, nice, he's there, win. That's not the case. I think you've laid that out very well. I think it is slightly better on a binary. Again, neither are good. It's like 0 to 0.1. So I think it's a little bit better because you just mentioned it. He's around his teammates. He's going to meetings. The only thing he's not doing is physical stuff. Now, the big dog and pony show of talking to his agent, having a heart-to-heart with hands on hips, doing Danny Tanner TV dad style stuff at the end of every practice, and then doing the pandering to the fans and giving autographs and things, getting them to get all the clips out there of going, Terry, Terry, pay Terry, they're going to pay you. That's public pressure stuff. They probably don't love that. But I would rather have him there because almost all the business of football, except for practicing, is happening. So he's going to the meetings. He's around the guys. I'd rather that kind of pull him into the sphere, reminding him every day you're not doing the stuff, you're not here with us, instead of out of sight, of out of mind for him. Because again, neither is good, but this is like, again, slightly better, still bad.
But being able to live all the stuff that isn't practice, like the 90% of it that's the most enjoyable part, I think makes you less inclined to have the urgency to end it. In other words, like, I don't have a great comp, but if you got to tag along with your buddies all day long, and the only thing you didn't have to do is when they went out to cut the grass, you didn't have to go with them. But you get to have lunch with them in the cafeteria, and you get to just sit with them and talk with them, and you get to go to the movies with them, and you do everything else, all the fun stuff. You just, the most arduous, awful part, you don't get to do. And I get that there's fun to practicing for these NFL players as well. But I'm watching them out there. They're sweating. They're tired. I've talked to a couple guys that are just over it already. It's bodies leaning on each other. Uh-huh. You're risking injury and all this stuff. He gets to do everything else. What is his urgency? How many times through the years have players said that they don't enjoy training camp as it is? So if, like, he was not there at all, yeah, he would be missing the locker room conversations, the cafeteria time, the ping pong games. He gets to do all that stuff now.
Yeah, so. But there's a we're going through this and you're not thing that injured players don't like, and perfectly healthy players who are telling you they have an injury won't like that either.
Meaning he won't like it?
Yeah, like, because everybody's going through something. You know, sure. Like, if you're the guy just sort of standing there with your arms folded, well, everybody's working to the bone, and everybody kind of will glance at you going, hey, man, you know, at a certain point, there's that, I'm not part of this thing anymore. I should be out there with my guys that regular injured players have, that longing, and he's not injured. So I think that's that slight gravitational pull. Again, I'm not saying it's good. I'm looking for a silver linings playbook here in two bad options.
The idea behind the Terry McLaurin versus the team standoff, I think for most people, is that the team has all of the leverage. And it is unquestioned that they have most of it. I think you could say that without trepidation. But here's the part of this that isn't really being talked about at all. This assumption that eventually he's just got a post. And I'm as guilty as everyone of assuming that's the case.
It's my big point, I would say. It's kind of like my hammer, and I'm probably overstating the importance of that or the impact that's going to have, but that's kind of the thing I keep coming back to anytime we have this discussion.
Well, it's everybody's big point, because let's face it, there's only one way this ends, basically, in everybody's mind. If he doesn't get a deal, he tucks his tail between his legs begrudgingly, and at some point shows back up. Now, if he waits until the last possible second to accrue a football season, he could miss several games and still come back in season, have to get back into shape, and then play half of the year or whatever. But to your point, Danny, nobody thinks he's going to do that, and nobody thinks that's how this ends. But I just keep hearing this idea of, essentially, well, the team doesn't have to do anything. All they've got to do is just keep turning the calendar to the next day, and eventually McLaurin is going to come back. True. I do think that. I agree with that. But isn't there something to be said for a leverage from McLaurin's standpoint that we have not talked a lot about, which is go watch a practice.
Yeah.
Open to fans tomorrow, although I guess you have to have a ticket, and there's only three open practices, so if you didn't get your tickets in the first 6 minutes, it's too late, which is awful that the NFL and the Commanders do that now, but it's where we are. But when the practices are open tomorrow, if you're there, watch the receiving room. You know, watch how they stack up against Washington's corners. The last several days when I've been out there, corners have the advantage. Without Terry McLaurin, you've got a banged-up version of Noah Brown. Debo is not a traditional wideout, every single down out wide or in the slot. He's all over the place. So if you're talking about just traditional wide receivers that are fully healthy right now and on the practice field, Michael Gallup, who was good a bunch of years ago for the Cowboys, Luke McCaffrey, who caught under 20 balls as a rookie last year. Jalen Lane, a rookie this season, who caught a few dozen passes in his college career at Virginia Tech. KJ Osborne, who was on and off of practice squads in the NFL, kind of on the waiver wire last year. Chris Moore, who's been in and out of organizations, scrap heap, practice squad the last couple of seasons. And then a couple of camp hopefuls, you know, camp body roster hopefuls that have impressed in moments like Ja'Cory Brooks or Mike Strachan mossed somebody in the end zone at a practice I was at a couple of days ago. That's the wide receiver room. I got news for you. That's some leverage for Terry McLaurin if this team actually thinks it's really good. If they, Danny, assume that they have a chance to get back deep in the playoffs to an NFC championship game or a divisional round. Because they cannot do that without him.
Agreed. Yeah, the counter to the counter, because you're right. Everything you're saying is correct. The only way for Terry to get what he wants is to go on a football version of a hunger strike. Right? If you do damage to yourself and your rep and your ability to sign and your ability to earn what you want to earn and get what you think is coming your way is deserved, is you're damaging the team by damaging you. If you're willing to go full Le'Veon Bell, yeah, the team's worse off. If that's what you want to do, you can, you know, all of your brothers and all the guys that you've bled and sweated and worked through and everybody that's on your side, you're letting them all down to go on this hunger strike just to prove to the team that they're the big bad guy or the organization, the front office, whomever you want to put the finger at. He can do all that damage to himself and make the team worse. That is 100% true. That's on the table if that's how he wants to play it. My view on that is, it's so disincentivized and so silly, frankly, for a player who would like to be paid, who'd like to earn what he thinks is worth, to go down that road, given the way the CBA is. It's a fool's errand, but it is on the table. And you're right. I mean, he has that leverage in the sense that you can't do what you want without me. So you've got it, even though I'm under contract and I owe you another year and you guys owe me money based on that. If I don't live up to that contract, you know, watch what happens to your dreams. Watch what happens to the second season of Jaden Daniels and all the goodwill and all the cultural impact that Dan Quinn and Adam Peters and everybody has had. I will light fire to it, even though it's my own fortune too. I'll ruin you guys' thing while I'm ruining my own.
The Joker.
Exactly. That's what I think of.
You're right. You're 100% right. He ain't the Joker. He's not throwing the match on the dollar bills. But I'm saying we at least have to acknowledge that we are assuming we don't know. Everyone's speaking as if it's a certainty because it's common sense enough that it feels that way.
Yep.
But it is still an assumption until he shows back up. And I guess my point is, it's the one part of this I haven't heard talked about enough, is that they really need him to play if they're going to be what they want to be on offense overall. The damage done to the passing game, to your offensive scheme, to Jaden Daniels' development, the single most important thing in this entire organization, the sun in their solar system, is significant if Terry McLaurin is not out there. And because we all just assume at some point he's got to be there, we go, oh, it'll take care of itself. But in the meantime, I think it just needs to be acknowledged that when I hear, I think it was EB earlier today that said, like, they don't need to budge 1 cent, 1 penny. And his point is well taken. I totally understand that. You've kind of said the same thing.
I have, yeah, for sure.
They don't have to do anything. Just keep looking at the calendar and saying, all right, well, maybe tomorrow he'll admit defeat. Okay. But the secret that nobody wants to talk about is, if he isn't playing in week one, your chance of beating the Giants gets a lot worse. You might still beat them because they're terrible, but thank God it's the Giants. You know, if you were playing Pittsburgh, or you were playing Kansas City, or you were playing a grown-up like Green Bay or Minnesota or Detroit, you might need him actually to get over the top. Yeah. He's the difference between being able to go out and score 30 or maybe scoring 22.
And it, like, they pushed the Giants around last year when they were good. I mean, they had two really competitive, awkward games with them. Very NFC East of you. You're totally right.
But if we're going to tally this up, I guess that this would be my final thought on this. If we're going to say the CBA is currently constructed works against him, $23 million a year Cortland Sutton signed for yesterday hurts him. Having a year of term left on his contract hinders him. Okay. Then we also have to say Washington needing him to win games helps him.
Yes.
And that the Commanders risking an 11 personnel grouping with Osborne and Moore in week one sure as hell is some leverage. Like, the idea that he's got zero, I don't know if we can keep saying that.
I think you're right. I mean, to me, again, I've applied common sense and I've applied reasoning and I've applied knowing the person, right? Like, just naming a receiver. Antonio Brown doing some sort of self-sabotage before he, you know, it got this bad. But while still in Pittsburgh, that would fit the player. Brandon Ayuk not signing until the end of August last year after going on Instagram Live saying, I want to play somewhere else and I don't like these guys, whatever. Doing some self-sabotage, that fits. It doesn't fit for me with McLaurin. This guy that he's been for so long, transforming into this cartoon villain that will ruin this season and his friends and teammates and everybody, just in the name of proving this point.
But did his image fit with him being at Eastern Motors?
It did not.
Did it fit with him holding out?
No.
One of two players in the NFL that is right now?
No.
Did it fit with him every single day, basically
putting on this little show and hanging out with his agent and stuff?
I was going to say twisting the knife a little bit more and more from Adam Peters' front office standpoint, where you walk out to the chanting and sign your autographs for 45 minutes and, you know, have your public interaction with your agent? Because, again, it's not going over very well on the front office side of that building.
No, that would not be in the typical bits of character for him. I would say this is an exceptional circumstance.
Right, but so would not playing.
So would not playing. And that would be to the nth degree. That would be more than... That goes from Terry McLaurin irritated, trying to agitate for a better deal, to downright selfish diva that doesn't care what burns as long as he gets his way.
See, I would never view it as selfish diva that doesn't care what burns. I would just say it's business, it's gotten personal, and this is him standing up for himself. But I would say that here's the difference. What he's doing now is not financial like ruination, so to speak. He showed back up because it was really bad for his financial situation to stay away. So he's there now, and the financial part can't be affected again until, you know, you don't accrue a season. The reason I think me and you and everybody else assumes that eventually he would show up in season is because you have to be on the team enough for him to actually get to credit for the year, not to mention to get your checks for playing football, but that way you get to the market to get paid again or get tagged or whatever it is this coming offseason. But let's open up the phones on this at 800-636-1067. Our listener lines are there for you. If you've heard, like I have, this idea that the team is not going to budge, they don't need to budge, there's no reason for them to bend the knee at all, do you agree with that? First off, 800-636-1067. That eventually he'll come to them. Because I think most of us, that's kind of the deep assumption in the back of the head, is like, it'd be nice if they met in the middle. But if someone has to go to the other person's zip code, the team's not traveling to McLaurin's neighborhood. But when you look at that wide receiver room, what are they without him? Can you make the case that they don't need him on the field to be a prolific passing offense? Is there some version of this room, sans McLaurin, early this year, Brown, Debo, Gallup, McCaffrey, Lane, Moore, Osborne, where you say, yeah, they're good enough without McLaurin? Because it seems like that is the ultimate leverage when they've built this room around you.
Mm-hmm.
And without you, you go from above average group to well below average. So I told you I wanted to give you a few guys that I thought had really good practices.
Yes, indeed.
Rookie wide receiver Jalen Lane out of Virginia Tech, Danny, continues to impress me. I have low expectations for him this season, specifically because I think the role he's mostly going to play in this offense is the Debo Samuel role of, like, jet action in the backfield, some bubble and screen stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And if Debo's healthy, that's going to be him. But also because last year, you know, Jalen Lane is a wide receiver at Virginia Tech, caught only 38 balls. It wasn't like he was overly involved. For his college career, he had a couple hundred catches, mostly at Middle Tennessee State. Last 2 years at Virginia Tech, he caught 79 balls in the ACC. But I will say today, he caught two long balls where he got wide open deep from Sam Hartman. One was on like a deep corner route where Hartman rolled out against his arm to the left out of the pocket and kind of set and threw, and Lane was behind everybody and would have scored on a long touchdown. Another was on a seam shot down the field where he just got behind his assignment and made a really nice hands catch. But he is just extremely noticeable. I was standing next to Brian Mitchell as he was, you know, scoring one of the touchdowns, and B. Mitch was saying, like, he just keeps making plays. That's all you can do. And he's listed. I've stood next to him. He's not a big guy, like around 5'10-ish maybe, but he's got speed. He's got twitch. He's got some wiggle in the open field. I am 100% intrigued by Jalen Lane.
I wonder what if everything was ideal and he had every opportunity and it was, you know, fed the ball appropriately, et cetera, what his ceiling is. Because I just don't know. You mentioned the college production. And Middle Tennessee State was a 70-catch, 940-yard receiver. I have no idea who they're playing against. I don't know if that's valid, not valid, whatever. Then at Virginia Tech, quarterback issues abound. Got used, you know, almost as much in terms of jet sweeps and those kind of actions as they did throwing him the football. But that doesn't necessarily tell you all the traits. It doesn't tell you that had he gone somewhere else, more prolific or with a more wide-open offense or an air raid type system, what could he have done? I don't know. But the things that you haven't seen from college are some of the route running, the precision, what can you do in the full route tree, et cetera. I still don't know that. I can't. That's one of those guys that I cannot wait to see in preseason.
Well, he told us when we talked to him after the draft, if you remember, that he thought he was going to bring speed, the ability to get open down the field. And you've seen that in practice. Whether that translated in the game or not, I'm not sure. But how I would say it is kind of what you just said, which is we are closing in on a preseason game against the New England Patriots. It'd be great to be there and to be lucky enough to be at that practice. It's on the road. I'm not traveling. Because the 11-on-11 work would be great as well. It's the same as a game, essentially. Might even be more helpful to dictate who's what and who's not. Just to watch those situations, those game reps that you're getting. But in the preseason game, I'm guessing that a guy like that is going to play a lot. Especially without Terry McLaurin. It's not like you're going to have Deebo Samuel playing in that game for more than a series, if at all. So that means someone like Jalen Lane's going to get reps. And I am fired up to watch him. I mentioned Sam Hartman threw him both of those passes. Hartman had a really good day today. And I've kind of been wondering, does he just go on the practice squad again, or does he make the team? You've got Jaden Daniels as your starter, and Marcus Mariota as your backup. There are two other quarterbacks at camp. It's Hartman in year two, and then Josh Johnson, who they brought in, who has played for a near record amount of teams at the quarterback position. Start at camp, I would have bet Josh Johnson's the three, just like Driscoll was the three last year, and Hartman just remains on the practice squad. And that might actually be what they do and what they're thinking. I don't know. Is someone going to pluck Sam Hartman? Probably not. I mean, unless you get points for having a handsome quarterback in your building. Is that something you're necessarily going to waste a roster spot to bring in Hartman as a number three? They could probably put him on the P squad, but you developed him last year. You spent a lot of time, a lot of energy with him. I'd imagine he's gotten a lot better from being in your building. I like how he's performing. Is there a chance he could be their third quarterback? And you lop off what was Driscoll last year, and instead of having two veteran backups, you just have the one with Hartman as a three. Would that be an issue for anybody? I don't think that would be a problem.
I don't think so. I mean, again, at some point, you got to let the bird that's been in the cage fly. And what I mean is, you how many mentors does somebody need, right? Like Driscoll, who's been around, who's a journeyman, to do what Mariota's doing. It's almost like a repeat situation. At some point, you got to let these guys grow together. And you let Jaden Daniels go from neophyte rookie to, he's not a rookie anymore. I mean, he's got legend of the NFC title game. Now kind of allow him to sort of assert more comfort. And, so I wouldn't necessarily hesitate to have a younger player with not a lot of experience as part of that quarterback room as the third guy.
Now, here's an observation, and if you go out there as a fan, you might see some of this stuff that I've had for 2 years, which is when you're doing things where you're just throwing the football or like four guys are side by side going through quarterbacking drills, I think Hartman never stands out. He does not have an arm at what I would even say like average NFL level. The example I'll give you is you've seen, I'm sure, a million times the videos and the pictures of them throwing the ball into the net.
Uh-huh.
They do it every practice. Just the couple of times I've watched, Josh Johnson's really good at that. Jaden Daniels is probably the best at that. Marcus Mariota has some success. It seems like if I was to rank the four of them, Hartman would probably not be high on that list. And I'm not saying that means anything. In fact, I would say that it doesn't really. But when they're all in a line dropping back to throw the football, same thing. You're seeing who spins it, what's it look like. And Jaden Daniels stands out. I would say Hartman's kind of the opposite of that. But I do think when you get an 11-on-11, and you see this in his career when he was at Notre Dame or before that at Wake, maybe he's a gamer. He's got some Heinicke to him, but mm-hmm. he just doesn't play in games. Like, what if you're a gamer that never plays in a game? I think there's a little bit of like a Taylor Heinicke to Sam Hart.
Yeah, that was sort of the Case Keenum deal or Colt McCoy, where it's like he's not going to wow you in shorts and a t-shirt.
Think baseball. Bullpen session? You're not walking away impressed.
Yeah, like
you get him out there, and he's adding, subtracting, and he's competing, and he's setting guys up and reading swings. maybe he could be effective.
You remember Chad Cordero, who was awesome, came in studio with us, like talking about his bullpen session where he was throwing like 88, bounced a bunch of sliders, and he's like, oh my God, I'm not even getting drafted, let alone, you know, where he ended up going, comes in and has an unbelievable career because they saw something. It was more than just, you know, as you said, the what the radar gun said.
So two other quick observations from practice today. Quan Martin had a really good sequence. He's had a good camp in general, but back-to-back plays, batted ball at the line of scrimmage, leaping on a blitz, and then he had a TFL, or would have been a TFL, where he thumped Austin Eckler in the backfield. But I thought it was interesting they were bringing him downhill a lot in what was a red zone period, but I would say even more like a goal to go. It seemed to me like they were set up around the 9 or 10-yard line, running goal line stuff from basically the high goal line area. And I thought he did just a couple of things that stood out and showed speed, but he's had a good camp, and he's turned into a nice player. So Quan Martin, I'll give a star two for today. And then lastly, I know people are probably tired of hearing about this, and this has already become too much in terms of the hype train, but really nice day for Jacory Kroski-Merritt again. He had one particular run off the edge on a stretch run, where he kind of super patient behind pullers. Think like Portis behind Mike Sellers back in the day, where he's like waiting. Hits the hole, jump cuts, gets to the edge, gets angled out of bounds, picked up like 10, 12 yards. But Deebo Samuel came run. He was on the sideline, not even on the field. Comes running over to dap him up. It was one of those plays where if you're watching it, you go, damn, that was pretty good.
Yeah, okay.
And he has a few of those, You know, where there's a little bit of burst. They had another drill today where running backs were working on jumping over these bags, like goal line, can you leap over the pile, I guess is the idea. Think about when you're trying to go over the top of the O-line, D-line to plunge into the end zone. And at the end of practice, of the running backs that were still doing this, earlier in the day, Austin Eckler, I guess, had successfully jumped over four. Like, he was the only guy after practice who was tired, spent, sweaty, whatever, who could clear four bags. I mean, it's a huge vertical. I mean, this would have been like a dunk contest.
Right.
Like, bring me out there, you have to jump over me. Like, he was the
basically
only one that,
a couple steps and a high jump over four. Yeah.
Chris Rodriguez was like plunging into all four bags. yeah. Brian Robinson like wasn't really getting close. Merritt just comes up twice, does it. He went for five and almost did that. But he's clearly a pretty explosive athlete. I just like what I see. Now, until he plays in a game, none of it matters. But you want to talk about being excited for Jalen Lane against the Patriots next week. Merritt is on the short list.
I got to figure it out. I mean, the whole goal is to figure out what's real in the preseason and what's not. I mean, you've seen so many stellar preseason performances, and around here, it's what we majored in for decades. But every once in a while, when the quarterback is tearing it up, and you go, maybe that guy should be the starter. He should be. See Gus Frerotte, or see Trent Green, or see some of the guys that stood out as the second or third dude, and eventually they got the call and were pretty good. You're just sort of looking for some of those traits. It's so hard to tell when the other team's not scheming. It's hard to tell when you're going against guys that are going to be delivering furniture in a couple of weeks. You never really know until, as you said, the real lights come on and everything, but you could sort of see signs. You could look for those kind of moments. I mean, to me, it's like NBA Summer League to a degree, where the only thing I care about is if you can't do it at all. If you can't do it there, we have an enormous problem. I won't know for sure that you're 1,000-yard back in waiting if you tear up the Patriots second team, but I'd rather see that than not.
Yeah, you got to show me something. We should actually start with the Nats before we move on, oddly, because there's some significant news out of the Nats clubhouse today. They made their second pre-trade deadline deal, and there is continuing to be smoke on whether or not they're going to deal Mackenzie Gore, one of their two all-stars, the ace of their pitching staff. You know, I'm on board with trading him.
Same here.
I think it's going to be really difficult for the fan base if they do. Gore, after one of his worst starts of the season, who's been struggling lately, admitted after the game that, yeah, he is seeing a lot of the rumors and doesn't want to say that it's affecting him. He said, but I'd be lying if I told you it's not something I've been thinking about. So maybe his final start as a National. Maybe the final pitch he ever threw was a two-run home run that cost him his ball game today, and he got removed right away.
Yeah, so you thought about that yesterday. Well, Mike, the Nats have played twice since you and I last spoke to the folks. since last evening, two games. Michael Soroka really struggled, not a great final audition, if there is such a thing, heading into the trade deadline. There's been some speculation around him, probably not as a starter for a first division club, but a useful arm. Velocity down, curveball was as bad as it's been in months, so that wasn't particularly great for his stock and value. And Mackenzie Gore, a name that obviously is bigger, it supersedes one start today, or a couple of hiccup starts in a row, quite frankly. This is a top of the rotation, maybe not a true one, maybe a two. Who cares? You still have to pitch big games, and you would if you went and acquired Mackenzie Gore. But, yeah, it's certainly not his best stuff. And, you know, this was one of those things that I don't want to say we thought we outgrew, GP, but got squeezed, I thought, on what could have been a strike three call. You're not the first pitcher to ever have that happen to you. The next pitch is the most important pitch. Next thing you know, home run, as you said, day unravels, and you know, and kind of off we go there. But, yeah, he's a human being. I mean, you can't help but see those things. These guys aren't dumb, right? You get to the major leagues, you kick around a little bit, you sort of see the score, and a team that's 20 games under 500 after the loss today, that's kind of spinning their wheels. Other guys have already been traded, I think three so far on this, just on this road trip since they left DC. Yeah, you could certainly do the math, and that speculation has to enter your mind. It has to enter those kind of private conversations or text threads and things. It's human nature, and it's normal.
Yeah, he is struggling with his command, is what I see. I mean, he's lost his breaking ball that was so dominant at one point. This is probably a command and control issue right now. He just hasn't been as sharp post-All-Star break. And I think it has a lot more to do with that than the fact that he sees some tweets that say he might get traded before his starts. But the fact is that right before the break here, he's had a few of, you know, his worst outings of the season. I should say the deadline, less the break. But I think he's going to be fine. He's either going to be in Washington and he's going to get his act back together. He'll be traded to a contender. And we'll know as of tomorrow because the deadline is set for 6 p.m. tomorrow for Mackenzie Gore. In the case of both him and Soroka, who you mentioned, a start, two starts, three starts, none of that's really going to be a factor. If a team is interested in those players, it's because of the stuff that they have, the ability that they would have if you added them to your rotation or your bullpen. Results, certainly in a small sample especially, just don't matter that much. But I do think the velocity for a guy like Soroka could be a hindrance.
I think it has to be, right?
Yeah, just because you wonder, is the arm okay? The Nats are saying it is, but when you're down 2-3 miles an hour over a couple of starts, generally that's, you know, precursor of some issues. So I'll be curious to see if they can get something done with him. I do think they'll trade Josh Bell. Fascinated to see if they move Nathaniel Lowe, who's under contract through the end of next season as well. But the trade they made today, Danny, was a really good one because you dealt two guys that aren't going to be here next year who both were here for a cup of coffee as passerbys, basically. And you got two minor league players that are controllable for a combined dozen seasons. I mean, this is exactly what Mike DiBartolo 100% should be doing. For those of you that didn't hear about the trade, the Nationals shipped relief pitchers, Andrew Chafin and Luis Garcia, to the Angels. Now, again, that's pitcher Garcia, not infielder Luis Garcia. Chafin's a lefty, Garcia's a righty. Chafin was signed in season as a 36-year-old to help just batten down the hatches and
just steady the ship a bit, yeah.
Glue things down as the bullpen was falling apart. Luis Garcia, the reliever, actually recently touched 100, has been throwing 99. He's pitched 10 times for the Nationals, 38 times this season. I mean, he was literally here for hours. I mean, he has barely been on this team. So to put Chafin and Garcia together for the Angels package to go get Jake Eater, who's a 26-year-old lefty who was at one point in time a decent prospect in that system, and Sam Brown, who's a first baseman in AA, I think is brilliant. Neither of those guys is probably going to amount to much. There's a good chance Brown is never a regular starter at the major league level. Eater has pitched both in the bullpen, major league level, and as a starter in the minor leagues. 10.3 strikeouts per nine, by the way, as a starting pitcher in the minors, indicative of some decent stuff. Went to Vanderbilt, was a highly recruited player, fourth round pick in 2020. So it's the kind of guy with some upside that you want to grab, frankly. You throw Brown into the deal, who's 23 and a AA. You get anything for the Chafin Garcia return. I'm going to be excited. And to get a guy who could be in the major league soon in Jake Eater and someone who just you add to the system to create more talent with Brown, what a win for DiBartolo.
100%. So if you've ever played fantasy sports, you know what one of these looks like, right? Regardless of your fantasy sport. You pick a guy up off the waivers who's, you know, just out there for anyone to pick up at any point in time, and he plays well for you, and you include him in a trade to somebody else and get something that, that helps your team, whether it's this year or in a keeper league for the future. That's literally what happened. These are scrap heap guys, with all due respect. They're big leaguers. But Andrew, anytime anyone wanted to sign Andrew Chafin, they could have. Same with Luis Garcia, readily and easily available, incredibly low cost. Anything that you get back for someone that might be here in the future, part of the system, as you said, even if it doesn't, you know, put a hot air balloon to raise the tide of the system, this is the right thing to do. They should be doing this throughout, and it's kind of been a staple, frankly, of even with Rizzo here over the last couple of years. You sign guys to these bargain basement deals, hope they do okay for you, and you know, you send them on their way after they give you 100 games of hopefully decent baseball, getting a chance to play or pitch every day, you know. And this is the strategy, and this is very, very smart. No championships are won today, no banners, no one's throwing a parade for this kind of a trade, but it's just good, smart baseball decision making, where you probably got a little bit worse today for a team that's already plenty worse. So yeah, you're already about to drop a whole mess of games. That's already done before this trade, same with after the trade, but it is smart.
It's two times now that they've done this because of the Rosario deal earlier this week. So three players traded that were not bolted down, that were pending free agents, that are what I would consider to be seat warmers, seat fillers. Rosario, Chafin, and Luis Garcia, the pitcher. And they have gotten back four minor league players.
Mm-hmm.
I'm stopping short of saying prospects. I think Eater's the only guy who's really legitimately ranked any kind of a prospect in baseball. And he's at 26 now, having pitched for a couple of years in the majors, even on the fringe of that. But you do add minor league players to your system to create competition, to just stockpile as much talent as possible. And that's a strategy that can be beneficial. Sometimes you get a guy back, you have no idea what you're getting. Maybe Eater turns into a helpful lefty reliever. But they have four players that have come back, mostly between AA and AAA, three of them. One of them's a teenager who's been shut down with an injury for the rest of the season, who's in the Dominican Summer League and is a long ways away. But maybe a couple major league relievers for next season out of that deal. So anything that they can do to trade the veterans from this bad team, to your point, in a lost season where wins and losses right now just have not ever really been this insignificant. Because it's not even like if they lose, it's better. They are already a bottom five team in the sport at this moment, and they can't pick inside of the top nine. Remember the every other year philosophy now of the Major League Baseball draft. They had the second pick, got Dylan Cruz. Then they weren't allowed to pick in the top nine and got the 10th pick and took Seaver King. Then they won the lottery this year, picked first. Well, now, because of the CBA and the lottery, which I hate in Major League Baseball with all the quirky rules, they again will have to sit out the top nine because of the market they're in and the payroll and some of these other things. And so the best they can pick, they'll probably be on the clock at number 10 again. So even by, like, people that are going with the Wizards, tank, get the number one pick, the Nats can't even really control that part of it. So the wins and losses are borderline irrelevant. I care about things like James Wood getting out of his rut, C.J. Abrams finishing strong, if Mackenzie Gore is here, him not going into a second-half tailspin like he did last year, Jake Irvin not falling apart in the final month like he did. You know, these types of storylines, as you project forward. But trade Rosario, check. Trade Chafin and Garcia, well done. Next up should be Kyle Finnegan. Josh Bell, absolutely, move him. Soroka, going to be a free agent at the end of the year. What can you get back? Add as much minor league talent as possible, because the cupboard, while not completely barren, is just not looking like what you want it to. They are a below-average minor league system with a big league team right now that is near the bottom of the standings.
GB, this is something that I'm going to care about that I bet you will not. I rubber stamp everything that you just said. I agree with you 100%. The wins and losses aren't relevant per se when it comes to draft position. It's not like the other sports. The baseball's rules are terrible in this regard. I hope they get changed ASAP. I understand the sentiment of not wanting teams just to be perpetual bottom feeders, and you have to incentivize something, but the way they do it is ludicrous. Make it so you can't pick first 2 years in a row. Let's compromise. Let's say the Nats finish with the second worst record. The best they can do this year would be fifth. Something like that. This nowhere in the top nine or whatever is ludicrous and it's insane. Here's the other part I care about, though. I don't like the ability, or I'm rooting against the ability, for someone internally to be able to go, you see, the problem was Rizzo and Davey. I don't want that to just be the scapegoat or the excuse when something is systemically broken here. So to me, the losses matter in the sense that I want no one to be able to hide at any point in time. I want no one in the ownership suite to be able to go,
you know, we actually did a really good job this year. If it weren't for those two dinosaurs holding us back, we'd have been a lot better. Look at how good we were in the month of September or something like that. That's the only thing that I'm the slightest bit concerned about is it's very easy to blame the deposed kings and rulers of your program, right? So that's the only other thing I say when it comes to wins and losses don't matter. They do a little bit in that regard to me as kind of a cynical, irritated, ticked off fan of the club. But analytically, everything you just said is correct, and I would rubber stamp it.
Yeah, so they'd won three in a row after their opening game win over the Astros in this series. And at that time, they'd won 5 of 7, including two straight series. And they had a chance today, had they have won this rubber match with Gore on the Hill, which going in on paper against a guy with a high ERA.
You feel pretty decent.
It felt like you had a chance to win a third straight series. Now, it didn't work out that way. They get clobbered. And by the way, if your ERA is over 5 and you pitch against the Nationals, congratulations on your quality start.
Have a day.
Your 6 or 7 really good innings where you don't give up any runs, enjoy those. Your career performance, I mean, it is such a lock.
Yep.
Next time you see a guy with a ERA close to a touchdown pitching against the Nats, jump on FanDuel and make yourself a couple of bucks if you
seriously
can.
The Dylan G All-Star team grows every day. It looks like a guy throwing cracked wiffle balls out there.
They're bad in general, but there are two scenarios where they are at their worst. One, is it a day game?
Yes.
They will lose, and they will likely embarrass you in the process. They are, I believe, 13-33 in day games right now this season. It is unbelievable. Getaway day, they can't wait to get on the plane. I mean, they're fining people for contact, it feels like. But the second thing that I would say about this Nationals team where they are at their worst is, are they facing a pitcher who is overmatched and doesn't belong in the big leagues? Because if they are, oh, he's about to carve them up like a pumpkin on October 28th. I mean, it is unbelievable how bad they are. When they face good pitchers,
yep,
they hit them and they score. Joe Ryan this week, who's an all-star, who's got one of the best ERAs in the league, they knocked him around like a boxer who, you know, went out partying the night before. They just left him bloody in the middle of the ring. But my God, when they face a dud of a pitcher like today, does it get ugly for this offense. But anyways, you would reference that you kind of don't want to see them string a bunch of wins together because then you start scapegoating and they don't make the changes they need to. I just don't think it's going to work that way. You know my opinion. I don't think they're going and really making wholesale changes as it is. There is a very likely work stoppage looming in Major League Baseball. We know this.
Mm-hmm.
Next year is the final year of the collectively bargained agreement. Going into the 27 season, there will need to be a new CBA. There is major acrimony between the players and the agents, the PA, and the sport. You all saw the story of Bryce Harper, Mr. Tough Guy, getting in the face of the commissioner in the clubhouse nose-to-nose and telling him to get the bleep out of their dressing room, right? That is just a small microcosm, a small look into not Bryce Harper being a punk, which I guess you could say that was the case in that moment too, but the fact that players right now cannot stand the league and the way they're trying to operate with the implementation of, say, a salary cap and some of these things. So I bring this up to say, Danny, if we're really going toward a work stoppage like everybody assumes, I don't think the learners are going to go out and hire some hotshot executive for $5, $6, $7 million a year to then pay that person not to work. I think that they would continue with what is going on now, which is, especially if DeBartolo, who's made two pretty good trades so far, can get a good return from Mackenzie Gore, or if he flips Bell and he flips Lowe and they have a successful next couple of days, they will have seemingly crushed it in the draft. We'll see if the players are any good or not, but the philosophy was brilliant. They got all their guys signed with the savings of taking their favorite player at number one. Then they will have had a quality deadline. I thought when they went to DeBartolo, he had a really, really good chance of keeping the GM job. Now I'm convinced of it, just based on the fact that I've got to convince myself otherwise that the learners are going to pay an executive not to work for several months, who's a hot shot, who's one of the top execs in the sport that they brought in. You think they're doing that? I don't.
No, I don't either. I think status quo is the name of the game. And I guess what I should be more clear with what I'm trying to say. It's not just the GM position. It's the everybody gets to say in the organization, from you know, the marketing intern to baseball ops to the ownership C-suite to who runs the team store, who the person in charge of concessions. Everybody's going to get to say, ah, see the problem. It was Mike Rizzo and Davey Martinez. We fixed it though. Now we're good to go. And everybody gets to kind of keep going back to the status quo. That's what I'm more referring to, right? It's a bit hyperbolic, but it was always the then Redskins sort of mantra and way of doing things. Dan would trot out the new savior, whoever that was, right? And then things would go badly, and then that person would get scapegoated, and, you know, we'd find the new villain, or we'd find the new hero with the new white knight that would come in, etc. And that's what I'm basically saying. Everybody over there needs to be looking in the mirror at all times as if to say, what I was doing wasn't good enough. What we're doing isn't good enough. What can be better? And not just be able to hide behind, well, our record was better once we fired Rizzo and Davey Martinez. That's all I was referring to. But you're 100% right. The substantive change that is required from the billionaire family to, again, to make those kinds of introspective looks into things and to be able to say, hey, I need to do something different. Good luck waiting on that.
Let's start with the Terry McLaurin trade demand, because it came out quite literally about 5 minutes after we got off the air yesterday. Nice little kick to the tuchus.
Wasn't that nice?
For your pals.
Wasn't that fun?
I don't understand the timing of that announcement from him or his agent.
It's terrible timing by him and his agent.
So the agent clearly leaks this to, I think it was Jordan Schultz of Fox Sports who broke it initially. Doesn't really matter who it is. Schefter shortly after that came out with it. But generally, you want to leak things during the day, during the business hours, when all the national TV shows and radio shows are live and everyone can talk about it in the news cycle all day long, rather than right after the close of business, where by the time the morning rolls around, in D.C., it's still huge news, but there's a bunch of other things that are going to be happening. It's out of the news cycle. But on top of that, it's a little bit of a deep cut, nerdier thing. There is no access at the facility today.
Uh-huh.
So if you're the agent, part of what you're hoping to do is create a little bit of a circus. You are trying to make the story in Ashburn that Terry McLaurin requested a trade. And that'll be the story tomorrow when the media is back out there on a Saturday. Again, not a weekday, not when everyone's plugged in on their computers and trying to get all the news. Now it's a weekend storyline, which is better for the team anyway. And it's almost going to be 48 hours after the request for the trade. So just naturally in this minute-to-minute news cycle, a little bit of the fervor and the intensity dies down. So I just think from a sure business standpoint, like Agent 101, I was really surprised that they leaked it when they did.
Frankly, it's amateurish. It shows a lack of kind of understanding, because what's the point of it to announce it? You could do that internally and have those conversations. Why do you have a press conference at Eastern Motors where your job's your credit? Why are you signing autographs after practice every day? Why are you staging pictures and video of you and Terry talking after practices? You want it to go viral. You want people to be talking about it. You're trying to do your public pressure campaign. It just sort of shows you that it's not like this guy knows everything and has a total grasp on reality and what's supposed to be happening. This is a misstep, quite frankly. The idea is, no one can do business without Terry McLaurin. Everybody's so distracted. We're pressuring the team. You have to sign him. You did them a favor by announcing it in this way. Now, again, the crux of it is the trade demand. We'll get to all that. But it just kind of shows you, I have his agent filed in the maybe not the best category. I've kind of deduced that and figured it out.
I don't know that everything that they're doing at the park is for show. There's not a whole lot of places, honestly, where they're going to meet where the media is not going to see it. It's not like his agent's going in the building and can talk with him in the locker room necessarily. He's out there at practice, basically in the VIP area where families are. And just like the families come out on the field, there are other agents out on the field. We're just not interested in taking pictures of that interaction. So I don't think every time that they have a quick powwow or they have a conversation, or whether he's updating him on a conversation he had with Peters, or they're just talking about, you know, his mental and how Terry's holding up and how things are going, I don't think that's for show 100%. I mean, could they have text and phone conversations? Of course. Does Buddy Baker, the agent, have to be there? I guess not. I'm not saying it's 0% that they don't want to be seen. I think they're happy with the coverage that they're getting. As well, they should be, by the way. That's kind of my point with announce this yesterday at noon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do it on Wednesday, as far away from the end of the week as possible. Like, there were strategies they could have implemented and executed. but just surprised by when they released it. And by that, I mean leaked it. Could it have come out anyway? No, in other words, Jordan Schultz said within the last 30 minutes he had requested the trade, which means evening yesterday is when the agent told Peters Terry wants out. I don't think the team would have sent that to Adam Schefter,
right,
who seems to be the one that they go to with things, or Ian Rappaport or anybody else, because there's no real benefit for them to put out there that Terry McLaurin's requesting a trade. It's possible, and if that happens, okay, so be it. It wasn't the best situation ever, but at least you didn't set yourself up for a bad situation.
Mm-hmm.
You wait till first thing this morning, and it's 7 a.m. you send that out, and now it's the number one story in the news cycle for the next several hours. So I was a little surprised by that, but I guess we're burying the lead here, which is, what a development, man. I'm not surprised that he requested a trade. I've been saying for the last couple of weeks, it was actually odd that he hadn't requested a trade, as upset as he is. When you're holding out, normally you've already requested a trade, or you do it at the exact same time. When you're holding in, again, generally, see Trey Hendrickson, you've already gone public and said you'd like to be traded. So it was very strange to me. Those two things are normally coinciding and, you know, somewhat working in the same direction. I thought this would have happened a couple weeks ago. But when they didn't do it, it is their last card they can put down. It is their last play. And so if you're waiting, then doing it now is odd to me, because when you didn't play that card, at least you could have waited closer to the start of the season. I just feel like he's got nothing left now, McLaurin and the agent. You've done your holdout. You ended it very quickly. You've done your hold-in. We're almost a week into that at this point. Everything's kind of calming down on that front. He still comes out and signs the autographs. But Danny, as an example, after days of us following him around with our cameras and chasing him up to the building so he could say we're taking it day by day, yesterday he was signing autographs for 30 minutes. There wasn't a single camera over there recording him. Like, it got to a point where it was no longer a bigger deal that he was doing it than whatever was going on at the facility. So that's kind of where we are on the hold-in front. And now the last thing is to request a trade, which is a bigger deal than holding out or holding in.
Right.
This is the first time he has made the public statement to say, I'd rather have my money somewhere else than just be here on a cheaper deal. But where's this thing headed? I think still nowhere. I mean, the team's not trading Terry McLaurin.
Yeah, here's how the conversation would go for me. Hey, we'd like to request a trade. No. Would you like to talk about anything else, or do you want to keep holding out or in or whatever? I mean, it's pretty simple. At this juncture, there's no way I can replace a wide receiver one plus an incentive for me to do it. So no, there's no trade. Now, if you go out there as the agent and bring me something amazing, we can have a conversation. But I don't think that's going to happen. I think everybody's pretty much set. I might get a third rouner or something like that. Maybe a low second for Terry McLaurin. That's not worth it to me. I've got a win now window. We want him to play football. He's under contract for 25 this year. We could franchise him for 28 next year. We got you. So if you want to play football, it's for us. What else do you want to do? I mean, it's pretty simple to me.
Yeah, I went through the recent history of just receivers who have requested trades, but star players at other positions have done it as well. And they don't get traded. It doesn't really happen. There are certainly examples where it has, but T. Higgins wanted a trade, requested it from the Bengals, was every bit as angry with Cincinnati as McLaurin is with Washington. It was actually a little bit uglier for longer. I think that's just because McLaurin is having a hard time being the bad guy somewhat. But T. Higgins is still a Cincinnati Bengal as we sit here and talk now, after 2 years of him and the team being in a game of chicken. And he's on a new deal, by the way. He actually signed a new contract there. Brandon Ayuk, remember, requested a trade from the San Francisco 49ers last year. He and Jaden Daniels were like flirting with their videos and their texts, and he's got pictures of Commanders practice somehow and whatever was going on. And those guys are boys, right? He wants a trade from San Francisco and pretty clearly wanted to be here in Washington. Let me just see what team he's on. Oh, he's still on the 49ers and he's got a new contract. Deebo Samuel is now on Washington and was traded this offseason. It's been a couple of years since he started asking for a trade and agitating to get out of San Francisco. And he didn't get the deal when he asked for it. And he played that season for the 49ers because you just don't have the ability to force them to trade you. The chances that they actually trade McLaurin are remote. If I got one text from a Commanders fan yesterday or one comment, I must have got 50 from people who were sad or, you know, crying emoji or it's all over, Terry's gone. I'm going, no. These are two very, very different things. I can request to be in a certain teacher's class. The school does not have to grant it. I can request to my wife, hey, I'd like to sleep in tomorrow, and I'd like to go to the Nats game at 4:05. And she could say, that's a good request.
Thank you for your request.
They have no reason to grant this. I couldn't come up with one legitimate reason why the Commanders would or should trade Terry McLaurin. If they do, Danny, your receiver room is substandard and below average, and you can't accomplish any of your goals. Oh, by the way, he's under contract this year.
Yeah.
He has to show up. And you have the hammer you can slam still for next year, which is a franchise tag. So there's really no reason for them to grant him this trade. Zero.
Again, especially at this stage, at this juncture. This is a professional human being trying to better his livelihood. So I'm not diminishing that. I'm giving you the analogy, okay? So I'm not comparing him to my children, all right? This is a grown man. But when my child says, I'm not going to brush my teeth, you are. As you can get as mad as you want. You can agitate as much as you want. You can throw as many things as you want. You can scream and yell and throw your temper tantrum. In this case, it's a professional one. But that's what this is. This is a professional temper tantrum. And again, it's not, you know, he's not impugning anybody. He's not ripping anybody's character or, you know, lighting fire to things on his way out yet. But that's what this amounts to. The team has the hammer here, as you already said. And I keep coming back to this. This has been my salient point throughout this entire process. 25 this year, 28 next year, according to overthecap.com. Maybe it's 29, maybe it's 28.5 for the franchise tag. And after that, we can have a conversation. There is no reason for the team to go above those totals unless you buy the argument, but it's Terry and we love him and he's different. The team clearly doesn't view it that way. So in terms of their negotiating leverage, this to me is the, okay, man, now we're just playing the waiting game. That's the last lever you can pull. Is the trade me. No. What else you got? I mean, that's how quickly that would be dismissed for me if I was Danny Peters. Yeah.